Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Flag to Flag. It's Suits from the KVJ Show. Jeremy Kaufman on Fox Sports 640. Kristen Schaffaletti in here with me as always. And a little bit later this week than we were hoping. We were expecting to be on the air Monday night. But of course, as you know, the Daytona 500 was postponed until Monday. And unfortunately, we're not coming into this talking about the big win, which is what we should have been talking about for the 500. Instead, the horrific crash that ended the Daytona 500 involving Ryan Newman. And before we jump on to anything, this just popped up on my Twitter screen maybe 5 minutes ago, and it is from Roush Fenway Racing, the latest update on Ryan Newman.
Okay.
Ryan Newman continues to show great improvement after Monday night's last lap accident at the Daytona International Speedway. The veteran driver is fully alert and walking around Halifax Medical Center. True to his jovial nature, he has also been joking around with the staff, friends, and family while spending time playing with his two daughters. So, I mean, just
hallelujah.
The most incredible news that we have been hoping for and waiting with bated breath to hear. In fact, I have a picture right here on my screen of Ryan Newman standing up in the hospital with his two daughters. This, again, is from Roush Fenway Racing, and it is just amazing to see this. I'm retweeting this right now on my Twitter
that
right here.
He's standing 2 days later.
This just goes to show you the incredible safety of these cars, even with how horrifying this wreck is, and whatever injuries, you know, we don't have an official injury report, and there are things that have been put around on Twitter, and you know, I give NASCAR's media a lot of credit because they sat there and they refused to speculate while so many people on Twitter were. And we've seen Twitter's a great tool, but it can also be a dangerous tool when it comes to misinformation.
Right.
And I applaud them. And it's the same reason right now that as members of the media, we are only going to tell you what is out there. And I'm not going to speculate on anything on this show. But as we sit here and we look at this, Roush Fenway Racing has officially tweeted out this photo of Ryan Newman up and about with his two daughters. And that is the most incredible thing that we have been hoping for and waiting to see. So many people have been reaching out their support for Ryan Newman. You know, Kristen, it's been a long time since we've
anything
had
like that.
That kind of feeling. And, you know, look, we've seen it in motorsport. We know how inherently dangerous motorsports are, but we've been lulled into a state of safety with NASCAR racing. And it's because they have worked so hard on the safety of these cars. You know, 2001 was the darkest day that we have ever had in this sport, losing the great Dale Earnhardt, the Intimidator. But as many people will say, it is so true that with seven championships and everything that Dale Earnhardt did, at the end of the day, what may really be his greatest legacy is the safety improvements that were developed after Dale Earnhardt's crash. And we look at the kind of incident that Ryan Newman just had at Daytona, which really was a freak kind of incident. We've seen these cars flip. We've seen them into the fence. We've seen them in the catch fence. You know, Austin Dillon with that kind of accident that we had at Daytona a couple of years ago is the one that comes to mind, where everybody was sitting there in stunned silence thinking, is he really going to be okay after that kind of an accident? And with Ryan Newman, it felt like 2001. You know, the broadcast felt like 2001. If you've ever seen an amazing documentary, and it's a tearjerker, it really got me, the day, the 2001 Daytona 500. It's a Fox documentary that they did on FS1. I'm pretty sure it's on YouTube. Fantastic documentary, really just dives into how everybody's view of the 2001 Daytona 500 start to finish and all the events that played out, you know, took place in their eyes. And something stood out to me with Mike Joy, who, you know, that's my broadcasting idol right there. I think Mike Joy, and a lot of people will tell you, when you think of NASCAR broadcasting and a legendary commentator, you think of Mike Joy. And he said how, you know, you're standing in the booth, you don't know what's happening. And at the same time that you're trying to get, you know, your co-hosts, which at the time was Darrell Waltrip and Larry McReynolds, who were fairly new to the broadcast game, to focus on the finish of the race. But at the same time, as you're leaving the air, you don't want to understate the severity of the situation, but you also don't want to overstate it. And it's a very tough place to be. And hearing his description of that compared to his call, it really reminded me of what we saw at the end of Monday's broadcast. And I think for a lot of people, that was what was so scary about it.
Yeah, my mom texted me and she was like, Gordon, you know, Mike Joy too, but she was like, Gordon's like response just now, not good. And I was like, yeah, the way they both, like you were saying, the way you have to handle that is like, oh no.
You know, that's the one thing, you know, Jeff Gordon, a lot of people were talking about, you could see how nervous he was on his face.
Right.
You could see the differences of the situation, NASCAR covering the scene with these screens that you really couldn't see what was happening, NASCAR asking media to leave pit road, and then you have people on pit road that are giving you two different things. Ryan Newman is, you know, he's okay, he's talking, and then, you know, the next tweet, he's getting CPR.
Right.
And that's why you have to be so careful with Twitter, because you just don't know what the case is. And to see this update, honestly, from Roush Fenway Racing, I have the biggest smile on my face right now.
Because, I haven't seen the picture. You'll have to send it to me.
Yeah, it's right over here if you want to come around really quick and take a look at it. Ryan Newman is up. He's smiling. There's no bandages on this. You know, he's got his two daughters right there. It really is just, it's exactly what you want to see. And if you haven't seen it, Roush Fenway's got it up. I just retweeted it at SuitsKVJ. You can check out the photo and we'll try to get this thing up.
If he wasn't in that hospital gown, you would honestly think like it was just a regular picture.
Really? Yeah. Like it looks cheesing, like a family portrait.
Right. He's cheesing like any other photo that he's taken. And you would never think, wow, that's awesome.
It is amazing to see this because
that makes your heart happy.
It does. You know,
that really does.
Ryan Newman has been around the sport for a very long time. And regardless if it was your first start or your 600th start, that's the one thing that we never want to see in any form of motorsport. And in NASCAR, and I'm so thankful to be able to say this today because I wasn't sure I was going to be able to. We have not lost a driver in the Cup Series since 2001 with Dale Earnhardt.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know if when we started this show this week, if I was going to be able to say that.
I read something online that they were saying, like, I forget which driver made a statement, but the drivers were like, you know, when you're in the air flipping, your worst of fear is coming down and getting hit on the driver's side. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, and you know, you think about just the perfect storm with that wreck, because first and foremost, Ryan Newman went to the wall at such an extreme angle, he did not shave off much speed, you know? And
right.
You could see with the force of that impact and how quickly he went from the inside lane to the outside wall, you know, and it's amazing how every wreck is unique, because you'll see that same kind of accident sometimes where they hit the wall and it's a head-on impact and the damage isn't horrific because they scrubbed off the speed before they got there. And you never just know what's going to happen with that.
Mm-hmm.
But what was so different about this wreck is after that flip, Ryan Newman was on the ground, upside down, driver's side to the track. And like you said, with every driver, when they're spinning, when they're flipping, they always say it. Your worst fear is that you're going to get hit. And you're just hoping everybody misses you. And Corey LaJoy, he went straight into the window net, basically. I mean, mm-hmm. The A-frame, the damage to that roll cage, which has
been... You saw the whole car. We were talking about this earlier. You saw the whole car, like, fluctuate, like, bend.
From the angle we were looking at, you know, when Corey LaJoy hit that car, we were at the angle of the right side. He was coming at us. And you are so right about that. If you look at that replay, you can see the right side of that car flex.
Yep.
Which on one hand, it's like, okay, it absorbed part of that impact. On the other hand, you just realize how incredibly
hard that hit was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And really, if you think about these wrecks, what causes the damage and is the differential in speed. You see it in the big one. When somebody spins, but they're still sliding at 160 miles an hour forward momentum and they get hit, the damage to both cars isn't that severe. It's when somebody has slowed. You know, if you had a car going 150 and that car is going 50 or is stopped, you'll see that huge impact. And mm-hmm. Ryan Newman had lost so much speed after that impact. And Corey LaJoy, he has no chance to slow down.
Right.
Absolutely not.
Do we know the speeds? Has anything come out with?
It hasn't come out yet, but
no.
You know, we saw what these cars were doing
right.
During the course of that race, and you look at the impact and how quickly it happened. Corey LaJoy really didn't have much of a chance to slow down. I would absolutely say that it was well over 180 if I was to guess.
Right.
And you know, I don't have the details. This is me eyeballing it and thinking of the situation. But something else you think about with these accidents that we talk about in NASCAR racing, when you go to Daytona and Talladega, you don't break much. And NASCAR teams don't bring the strongest, biggest, most powerful brakes because they're heavy. And they're not going to use the brakes in that way. So in order to make the cars go better and faster, they're not going to put these big brake packages on them. But what the downside to that is, obviously, when you have a wreck in front of you, it is harder to slow down at these racetracks than it would be, say, this weekend when we go to Las Vegas Motor Speedway and you have, you know, more reliable, bigger brakes.
Right.
And that is one of the reasons why I think with Corey LaJoie you see such a hard impact. And you know, when we really break down what occurred here with this wreck, there's a lot of things, a lot of criticism, a lot of, unfortunately, misinformation, because what happens in a situation like this, NASCAR goes on the mainstream. And honestly, I don't read a lot of these tweets on Twitter. They frustrate me when people are ignorant to the situation. They say these terrible things. They start fighting when that shouldn't be the concern. But I wanted to know what was happening with Ryan Newman. I mean, you know, I do the KBJ morning show. I get up 3:45 in the morning. You are here the same time as me. You know, we get up early. Staying up past 8 p.m., my day is going to be ruined. Right. But when that wreck happened, I stayed up well after 10 p.m. because I couldn't go to sleep. I couldn't stop refreshing Twitter until I knew something. I mean, it was heart-wrenching.
Yeah, that I speak the same. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'm usually up a little past 8, but not anything to where I wanted to be up that late. But yeah. No, we both were. We were both texting.
And you know, everybody I knew was texting back and forth, right, that was watching that race. People who don't watch NASCAR were texting me.
There was tons of stuff on the internet that was like, I'm not even nowhere near a NASCAR fan, but oh my, am I praying, and you know, all this other stuff.
Now, the unfortunate side of that is people don't understand. And I spoke to people I know who were like, man, he just turned him. How could he do that? How is he not in trouble? I'm like, well, because he didn't. And it's really unfortunate because I know Ryan Blaney is having a tough day, having a tough week, because of course he is. He turned Ryan Newman, whether or not there was intentional anything to it, which I'm telling you right now, there wasn't.
Right.
That was a racing incident if I've ever seen it. But regardless, the sixth car spun off the nose of the 12. Nothing intentional, but that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And for Ryan Blaney, you could see in his interview how broken up he was, how nervous he was, and how that must have felt. And, you know, Ryan Blaney is very good friends with Bubba Wallace. And I wanted to just read this because Bubba Wallace tweeted this out earlier today, actually just about a half hour ago. Got to spend some time with YRB, you know, young Ryan Blaney, they've been calling him. He's holding up, but of course, devastated and bummed about the situation. Had to sit there and explain to him that there was nothing, you know, it could have happened to him or any one of us in the field. It's racing. And it's just unfortunate to be on either end of that. And that really is true. And if you're listening to this, you know, we've had some people reach out who said that they've enjoyed the show and they're not even really NASCAR fans. And I want to take a moment to walk you through that final lap to an extent. First and foremost, down the back straightaway, you get a huge push that pushes Ryan Newman to the lead. That comes from Ryan Blaney. That pushes him to the lead. They get by Denny Hamlin. Denny Hamlin drops in now behind Ryan Blaney. All three cars are on the inside lane. Ryan Newman, with that momentum, he gets a big lead of 3 or 4 car lengths. And normally, that's good. But when it comes to Daytona and Talladega, you don't want that. We've seen it so many times. If you get too far ahead and they get organized behind you, they're going to get a massive run.
And then they're going to pass.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we saw the 11 car, who has been a fantastic pusher. And if you remember earlier in the race, he was practicing a tandem draft when you lock bumpers with the car in front of you and you physically push them to try and get your speed up. And we've seen the differential. That could be 5-6 miles an hour faster. And when you're already doing 200, that's massive.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the run. Coming to the start-finish line, Ryan Blaney actually got sideways from the push because he got just hooked a little bit, and it turned him toward the inside. But at that point, Ryan Blaney was also making his move because he has a run. He's got a shot to win the Daytona 500. He's going to do that. And what is Ryan Newman going to do? He's going to do what everybody's going
to
do. He's going
to block.
Yep. And unfortunately, when he made that move, there was the contact, and you can't blame anybody. And if you look at the replay, you can see, and you got to look carefully, that the moment Ryan Newman comes across the front end of Ryan Blaney, before he gets turned, there's about a half-second gap there, which is an eternity in NASCAR racing.
Mm-hmm.
You can originally see a twitch to Newman's car from where they made contact. And at that point, Newman has started getting loose, mm-hmm. and he is losing momentum.
He's trying to hold it,
yeah.
Save it.
And in Ryan Blaney's position, you're not going to be able to react and slow down quick enough when you're already on someone's bumper to avoid that. And at the same time, and Ryan Blaney said in his interview, he got blocked. He wasn't going to be able to pass Newman once he got blocked. And at that point, what do? Do you move out of line and leave a fellow Ford driver without momentum as well as yourself and allow Denny Hamlin to potentially pass you both and win the race? Or do you push to the victory, Ryan Newman? And that's what was going to happen there. That's what Ryan Blaney was saying, and I believe that. I think that that's what was going to happen. But unfortunately, when he lost that momentum, he got turned. Not because Ryan Blaney wanted to turn him, because that is what happens in racing so many times. And I assure you, you and I both know it. If you go and you watch NASCAR at Talladega and Daytona on a regular basis, you see that kind of accident.
Every lap.
Every single accident pretty much that happens.
Literally.
Starts the same way, and nobody's doing it intentionally.
Right.
You know, we've seen this so many times. Let's look at the big one. We had a 19-car pileup on lap 185, and what happened there? Joey Logano gave a huge push to Eric Almirola, who as a result was pushed into Brad Keselowski, and it was too much. And Brad Keselowski got turned. Mm-hmm. That's what started the big one. There was nothing about trying to wreck anybody there. It was simply a push.
More power, and that was it.
That sometimes it just, the bumpers don't hit right, the driver is not prepared for it, whatever it may be.
Right.
The speed differential too high, it sets off a crash. And that's what happened at the end of this race. And I know Corey LaJoie is struggling today, too. Nothing he could have done. And honestly, I cannot tell you.
I've heard things going with him, too. So hopefully he's holding up, too.
Yeah, it's fantastic right now to see all of these drivers. Because this just happened. I mean, we were 5 minutes from starting this broadcast. And I refreshed my Twitter and I saw this announcement. The picture is up there. And to see the outpouring of love right now from not only fans, but media, drivers, racetracks, it's just incredible to see that pouring out right now. And to see how an entire community in motorsports is really a family.
I was just about to say, it just goes to show, even though you might not necessarily be a specific driver's fan, in the end, you are.
Even if you don't like the
let's
driver.
Be real. Exactly. Ryan Newman's not necessarily my favorite driver, but let me tell you something. I'm rooting for him with this.
And you have drivers that are in other sports. Some that honestly, you know, from public announcements, they're not fans of NASCAR racing. There are drivers who don't like it.
Right.
There are other drivers in other sports who watch and support it. But at the end of the day, every single person that gets behind the wheel of a race car or watches this sport and follows it, we know what can happen in these situations. We just know how bad it can always be, and we get numb to it because it is just inherently safe now because of what NASCAR has done with these cars, and we really just don't even think about it. And this was a wake-up call.
Mm-hmm.
And to see Ryan Newman in this picture, I'm telling you, you got to go ahead and see it. It truly just is one of the greatest feelings right now. I can't tell you how big of a smile I had when that popped up. To see Ryan Newman out of bed with his two daughters, it's just incredible.
Literally mind blown. Like yeah. You were saying, like, what? How? 2 days after that and you look like nothing's even hooked up to him.
I don't see a bandage.
Like, no, right. So that's what I was saying. Just for the hospital gown, you would never think anything of it.
I'm looking at this picture right now. I don't see stitches.
Do you see any, like, liquid, like the medicine rock?
I mean, the only thing, honestly, I don't even think anything's connected to him in this
right,
photo.
Right, that's
I'm
what,
trying to,
yeah, IVs or anything.
To zoom this in a little bit to see if maybe there is anything that I can see, and it looks like Twitter doesn't like when you zoom it in because it is, man, this computer sucks. Kevin complains about it all the time, and I understand
why. Now we know why.
But,
wow, that's awesome.
The bottom line, Ryan Newman, almost 200 miles an hour, slammed into his window net by another car at that speed after hitting the wall head on and flipping over, landing on his roof, and then let's not forget the car caught fire.
You're like reading my mind. I was just about to say, the fire suits did that their job.
Yeah,
that's
well, you know,
for sure.
And there was some criticism of the safety teams, and I don't understand why, because they rolled up on that scene fairly quickly, I thought, as quick as they could. And honestly, we sat there watching a small fire while fuel dumped out of it like a water faucet.
Brandon was like, is that gas? And I'm like, yeah. and it's coming a lot.
And thank God the safety crew got there when they did and put that fire out before something much worse happened.
Right.
So everything that could have went right, thankfully, went right as much as it could in this situation. And Ryan Newman lives today to like, talk about this.
Miracle, literally.
Really, yeah. Nothing more you can say about it. More discussion also on people, honestly, on Twitter. And there was a few things that I still wanted to address about the, how this played out. There were the people who said Ryan Blaney was at fault. And I think we've really, when you look at this, we know he's not.
Right.
But
right.
then there are the people who say it's NASCAR's fault. And some say it's because of the package. Some say it's because of the overtime, that we shouldn't have overtime. NASCAR has to get a green flag finish. Well, first and foremost, how many times do people lose their freaking mind when a race runs under caution for any situation?
Right. Overtime, they're only saying that because of the situation that happened. If the situation didn't happen, that wouldn't even be a topic right now.
Overtime is something that has been fantastic for NASCAR because people want to see a green flag finish. We see this all the time. People lose their minds the minute a caution. They lost their minds on Saturday in the Xfinity race
right.
when they threw a caution. And then I had people that sat there saying it was their fault because the caution didn't come out for Chase Elliott after the white flag. Well, let's look at this incident. That was basically a single car incident. There was some more contact, but Chase Elliott spun around entering turn one. And that incident was cleared by the time they came back around. If the caution comes out for that, all we're going to hear is people losing their mind yeah. that the caution came out. And then you equate that to what happened to Ryan Newman. Those incidents had zero connection.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Newman didn't get into that crash because of debris on the track, because Chase Elliott's car was somewhere because of reacting.
Right.
So you're giving the reason that NASCAR should have thrown the caution for an accident that everybody would have lost their minds on because it was not needing a caution because Ryan Newman got into a crash that nobody could have seen coming. That is ridiculous.
People just amaze me.
It's incredible. And then I want to remind you that everybody was losing their mind when the caution came out in the NASCAR Racing Experience 300 on Sunday, or Saturday rather, with the Xfinity Series at the end of that race. Because they were close enough to the start-finish line to finish. Well, what if the same thing happened? Would it have been NASCAR through the throw of caution then?
Right.
And I do want to address something, too, about these cautions. Because that is something that we discuss a lot about these yellow flags coming out. Why do they throw these cautions on the last lap? Why are they so inconsistent? I saw something that I really thought was interesting. And then Mike Joy tweeted out basically what I thought I saw at the end of the Xfinity race. We had this accident on the back straightaway toward the front of the pack. Race leaders Noah Gragson. The caution doesn't come out, though, until almost basically in turn four, even though this was at the back straightaway. We had some time. And the discussion's always the same. Well, maybe this impact here, that's what did it. But when we saw the replay, I focused on the caution lights because I wanted to see what was happening when NASCAR threw that caution. You know what I noticed? When those lights came on, a pack of cars approached the accident scene. Sometimes I think we forget that there are other cars further behind the lead pack most of the time. Mm-hmm. And you can't ask them to slow down if there's a battle for even one spot. You can't. What are you going to say? Because there's an accident, your position's now, you have to try and just say, okay, slow down, whoever gets it, gets it? No. NASCAR waits as long as I think they can to throw the caution before those cars get there to see if something can happen up front.
I would hope. I mean,
I think that's the protocol.
But that would only make sense. Why?
We focus so hard on, well, the officials can roll because the pack is past it. But they're not past it. The lead pack is past it. Watch these races. If you've been to Daytona, how many times have you sat there and the lead pack's on the back straightaway, but here come about seven cars that are toward the back of the pack. They're probably not main contenders, but why should their race matter?
Almost getting lapped.
Why should their race matter any less?
Right.
Mike Joy tweeted this out about the caution when people were calling it out. It was the right call. Last lap cautions will wave if, number one, cars are still racing toward the scene of the accident, or number two, immediate medical attention is needed. You can't tell me either on the Chase Elliott incident.
Right.
Because it was a overtime start where everybody was in the lead pack pretty much.
Yeah, like you said, nobody was sort of around it.
Yeah, and he spun. And he was not there when they came back around.
Got
and Chase Elliott
right.
did not slam the wall with incredible force. You know, yeah, he wrecked but it didn't need a caution. The Saturday incident needed a caution, and the Ryan Newman incident needed a caution. And it did bring a caution out. You know, there was debate online, a lot of debate, saying that Denny Hamlin didn't win the race because they said the caution came out. And again, this is something I think that needs some explaining sometimes because it's confusing with the caution. You know, the field is frozen no matter what when a caution comes out. But as some people were saying that they didn't think is the case, the caution lights determine the caution. People are saying, well, the caution lights are delayed from when the tower called it. That's true. Because somebody in the tower says, put it out. That's what they say when a caution comes out. So you have race control say, put it out. But somebody has to push that button. Mm-hmm. Somebody else next to him has to reach over and hit it. If you, and you know, look, let's be honest. It could take a second or two when somebody says it for you to turn around and hit that button. Because when the caution comes out, somebody has to initiate it. Otherwise, there's no time stamp on the video to tell you when it came out. If the official just says put it out, somebody has to push something to get that timestamp. So the moment right. of caution is when the button is pushed, which illuminates the caution lights. As a matter of fact, the caution flag is not the moment of caution. Mm-hmm. When it's waved, we saw this at Dover a few years back, or I guess a number of years back yet, but it was the 2011 finish to the Xfinity race. Carl Edwards, Joey Logano. Joey Logano slammed the wall. He flipped over, and it set off this massive crash. And I remember watching it and thinking, well, we didn't restart. We didn't get the white flag, and we were supposed to have a green-white checker there. But the caution came out before Carl Edwards got to the line. I paused the video, but when I watched it back the other way, just after the line, the caution lights came on. And so if you have that question, look for the lights themselves.
Yep.
That is when the moment of caution actually happens. So, you know, if you're listening to the radio that NASCAR's calling it, there is a delay. And I can't stress this enough. Do not base it on the broadcast graphics.
Oh, my gosh.
So many people are like, there's the caution. It's out. You can see it on the broadcast graphics. No, you can't. No, you cannot. That never syncs up. I mean, you can hear the car slowing down when William Byron crashed in the first clip a good 6-7 seconds before the caution came out on the graphic. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's quick. Sometimes it's not. It just happens to be that way. Please do not take that as the moment of caution. It is when the lights turn on. If you're really trying to find out, watch the walls, watch the fence, look for the caution light. That is going to tell you when a caution has been triggered. That is when the video and scoring freezes.
Yep.
And a reminder, too, on the final lap of the race, we use video evidence for positions on the racetrack. Because the question, again, was, well, who was leading at the last scoring loop?
Yeah.
That's for every other caution because we just don't have time to sit there and look over every one of these positions, every caution flag, or we would be spending half hour to caution every time. The end of the race, scoring loops do not matter to determine the finish. So a couple of points there to watch out for. And as we get down to the end of this, of course, Denny Hamlin wins the Daytona 500, something that is not really being talked about. And the only thing that we're talking about is controversy with Denny Hamlin, because Denny Hamlin won the Daytona 500. He started pumping his fist. He got his lug nuts checked, and he started doing burnouts in the grass, got on the car. The team came out. They're celebrating. And, you know, at first, I didn't even connect the dots with the multitude of boos that came out of the grandstands at Daytona when he was celebrating. I'm thinking, I mean, look, every driver's got their haters, but I don't think Denny Hamlin is that disliked.
That many, right.
It didn't even connect in my mind. And I really believe Joe Gibbs and Denny Hamlin when they say they didn't know. I do. Yeah, look, Denny Hamlin saw that car flip. But he's focusing on getting to the start-finish line. Newman comes across his wall. He flips, or comes across his front end right before he hits the wall and flips over. He doesn't know that Corey LaJoie smashes into him there. And his spotter, Chris Lambert, who's apologized, said, you know, look, if you're going to blame someone, blame me. Because frankly, I didn't tell him. He got down there. He was getting his lug nuts checked. I thought he was going straight to victory lane was the gist of it. And I took off my headset and I went to talk to Ryan Newman's spotter mm-hmm. to try and find out if he was okay. And Denny Hamlin wasn't getting that communicated to him when they got to victory lane.
Which all makes sense.
Absolutely.
And lines up.
And
so nobody can come back and be like, oh, that's a lie.
People are still saying that.
I know.
And that's what blows my mind. Because do you really think that these guys are sitting there and thinking, oh, I don't care?
But he literally just admitted, blame it on me. Blame me because I walked away to go check on Ryan Newman's crew.
Chris Lambert, his spotter, said that.
Right.
And he's saying, Denny Hamlin didn't know. And you're like, oh, like they didn't see that crash. Denny Hamlin didn't. And let's be honest here. Austin Dillon flew into that catch fence, ripped the damn thing down, roof front, got hit by Brad Keselowski, walked out of that car. We talk about how we're numb to this sometimes. He doesn't know what the situation is. And when they found out, when he was in victory lane, you can't tell me that that wasn't a subdued and appropriate victory lane celebration. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to 2001. Michael Waltrip didn't know that Dale Earnhardt, his boss,
and look what happened.
Died. And what did he do? He celebrated.
Right.
And I go back to that documentary again. Seriously, it's going to make, I mean, maybe it's just me. I cried my eyes out at that documentary, and everybody I know did. But Michael Waltrip's in victory lane, and he's talking through his experience. He's saying how, you know, nobody's coming in victory lane. I don't understand this. He's like, okay, maybe Dale's going to the care center, but where's Dale Jr.?
Right.
And it wasn't until Kenny Schrader came into victory lane to congratulate Michael, and he said to him, look, Michael, I'm concerned. We've got a problem here. And at that moment, it changed because now Michael knew what
something
was happening,
wrong,
that
right.
There was a situation with Dale Earnhardt. That's what we saw in the Daytona 500. And if you're going after Denny Hamlin for that, I'm sorry. You're just looking for something to be mad about.
But it literally shows, like you just said, all you have to do is tell them. And then the attitude and everything changes. So you can't say like, oh, he's heartless or something like that. Because like you said, the demeanor changed.
I mean, all these people trying to say that they're heartless and that Denny Hamlin and Joe Gibbs only cared when they realized that people were mad, that's ridiculous.
Right.
I'm sorry. Because every driver, teams, especially these guys that have been around the sport for a while and were back in the 90s and the 2000s like these other organizations, they've been through this. They know the risks. And like I said, we're numb to it now. But they see what happens, and when they realize this situation is happening, everything changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think you're just looking to be mad at that point if that's what you're focusing on.
Right.
Well, it's much easier to turn to the actual Daytona 500 now that we have seen this last update on Ryan Newman. Because at the end of the day, this was the biggest race of the year. And Denny Hamlin had a historic win in the Daytona 500. That was his third time winning the Great American Race. And when you think about that, and what he accomplished, that is a rare place to be. And you are in some rare air to have won the 500, not only multiple times, but more than two. He joins Jeff Gordon, Dale Jarrett, and Bobby Allison as three-time winners of this race. The only drivers with more, Cale Yarbrough has been there four times. And, of course, Richard Petty, seven times he's won the Daytona 500. But Denny Hamlin is sitting in a category with those drivers right there. I can only imagine what that must mean to the 11 team. And to Denny Hamlin. Something else that was very interesting about this race, Denny Hamlin has now won both of the closest Daytona 500s. The margin of victory over Ryan Blaney, 0.014 seconds at
wow.
the line. And, you know, it really is a shame that things ended the way they did because it overshadowed what was an incredible finish to a great race. And understandably, it should have been overshadowed by what happened. It's just mm-hmm. a shame that that occurred and we didn't get to focus on the
right.
end of that race and that the Daytona 500 had that cast over it. Another interesting fact here, you know, not a lot of people can say they've won back-to-back Daytona 500s. The last guy to do that was Sterling Marlin in 1994 and 95. Denny Hamlin, back-to-back Daytona 500s. You and I were at the Daytona 500 the last few years. Unfortunately, didn't get to go this year.
Right.
But we broadcasted live, you know, on Fox Sports 640, did an hour and a half pre-race show. And we talked about how, you know, after the fact, Denny Hamlin got that win. And how big of a deal that one was with J.D. Gibbs passing and how he got his second 500 and how big of a deal that was to be sitting here back-to-back wins, both of the closest finishes, and a three-time champion of the Great American Race. Denny Hamlin, to me, with just those stats alone, cements himself in addition to his wins in the Southern 500 and overall as a Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's safe to say.
Yeah. Like you just said, how long has it been?
With or without the championship, too.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the last thing Denny's got on his to-do. But with or without that, with the amount of wins he's had in the series and everything else that goes with it, Denny Hamlin is Hall of Fame material. And it was just a huge win. And then, you know, you think, honestly, think past that, Denny Hamlin is in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of lost on you sometimes, but every win matters. Denny Hamlin is in the playoffs. He's carrying playoff points already for getting that victory.
Just like that.
And I'll tell you, you know, looking at the results for the Daytona 500 and the plate racing and the craziness, what a fantastic run for so many drivers that normally wouldn't get to say this. And you think about how much money's on the line during the Daytona 500, what this can do for these teams. Denny Hamlin, obviously your winner with Ryan Blaney coming home in second place. Chris Buescher, the number 17 that he took over from Ricky Stenhouse Jr., mm-hmm. brand new run with them, third place in the Daytona 500. In fourth place, David Ragan.
All of, like, not saying anything bad, but all of the ones who you wouldn't have necessarily thought would have been within even, like, the top five.
Let's look at David Ragan, though. David Ragan retired last year.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, it was like, you know, just a few weeks ago, Rick Ware Racing, with a different number and some alliances, says, you know what, let's put him out there for one last ride.
Let's try.
And he goes, I'm going to take the 36 out. I'm going to run the 500 one last time. He finishes fourth. Incredible for Rick Ware Racing and David Ragan. What a way to go and end your career.
Yeah, really.
A fourth place finish. Kevin Harvick ends up in fifth. Clint Boyer sixth. Jeff Gordon, you do not have to wear the Kansas Chiefs jersey. You already got your first time having to wear it. You shouldn't have made that bet in the first place, I guess. But I don't know much about football, so maybe it was a good bet. I think the 49ers was an upset or that they lost. I don't know. Maybe. Who knows? I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm going to stick to NASCAR. Either way, Jeff Gordon doesn't have to wear that jersey again. Brendan Gaughan. Remember the flip of Talladega last year? And he's like, you know what? I'm sorry, Mom. I'm coming back for the Daytona 500. Seventh place, and this is his last Daytona 500. He's retiring after this four-race slate with Beard Motorsports in the 62, only running the plate races. Seventh place he finishes. Corey LaJoie, despite the contact, eighth place for him. And, you know,
literally
all things
all
considered,
of these people who you would have never
I mean,
when
you look at Corey LaJoie slammed into Ryan Newman, and then lost in all of this craziness, Ryan Newman. In ninth place, flies over the start-finish line in that horrific accident and is okay today walking around, living to tell the tale. And at the end of the day, he still finished in the top 10.
Living to tell the tale. I would like to get, like, a documentary on that.
Oh,
and get his, like, full-blown, like, story of that.
Ryan Newman is, I would imagine, going to be very vocal here, and I can understand. If there's anybody who has been vocal about cars flipping and landing on Ryan Newman at these right. plate tracks, we've talked about it so many times, there's a lot of frustration there over the years. He's had some very pointed comments toward NASCAR, and I understand, because Ryan Newman has got the worst luck when it comes to either flipping or having a car land on him.
Well, isn't he the one who got the cage added?
Yeah, there's an extra piece in the cars. It's a good point. Then they call it, honestly, the Newman bar.
I was going to say, isn't it like the Ryan Newman bar? Yeah.
And I believe that one was a result of the 2009 fall Talladega flip. He flipped and he landed on top of Kevin Harvick, which broke the impact of the roof. But it was so crushed that even though Ryan Newman was okay, they had to cut him out.
Right.
And I think that's where we got that additional support.
They added it, yeah. And look now. You used it. You needed it, literally, to save your life.
And, you know, the safety enhancements, that just shows you NASCAR looks at everything. They really do. And I'm not going to be surprised if we're slower at Talladega. You know, we've had a major incident here, a major flip. I wouldn't be surprised to see NASCAR step in and take some more horsepower out, maybe keep these guys around 190 instead of 200.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it before.
Right.
But something else that you have to applaud NASCAR for is Ryan Newman 6 and the 32 of Corey LaJoie. Do you know where those cars are this morning? They are at the NASCAR R&D Center, Research and Development Center, because NASCAR wants to take both of those cars and figure out why the cage caved. What about that impact? And recreate this crash. What can be done to maybe prevent this?
To not have it cave, yeah.
They took those cars from the Daytona International Speedway back so that they can find out what happened. That is one of the things that's so great about NASCAR, is they don't waste any time.
And like we were saying, they have it on video and everything of the cage flexing. And so they'll look into every piece of that.
And you know, NASCAR has data recorders in those cars. And the rumors have flown around about the G-forces and everything. You know, there are some reports that could have been 55 Gs. I'm not going to go ahead and detail all this stuff because, frankly, I don't know.
Right.
And I don't want to be, you know, throwing all the hearsay out here. That's a number I've heard. It's not confirmed, though. And honestly, I can't tell you that. That could be the fakest news
right.
of anything right now. But the good thing is NASCAR can look at that data because they are set up to do that. Wrapping out your top 10 to get back to that result order, Kyle Larson, a top 10 finish right there. And, you know, we take a look here at what, you know, did transpire during this race. A couple of notables I wanted to mention on the finishing order. John Hunter Nemechek First Daytona 500, he gets an 11th place finish. Justin Haley, Cowlick Racing, is starting their first ever cup race, 13th place. Chase Elliott, after the final lap incident, ends up in 17th. Matt DiBenedetto with a 19th place finish. 20th for Ricky Stenhouse Jr., who was the pole sitter. In his first 500, Christopher Bell ended up in the 21st position. Alex Bowman, who started on the front row, in 22nd. Your pole sitter, Stenhouse, I think we just mentioned, was in 20th. Joey Logano, who was my pick to win the race, did not have the day that we were hoping for. Had a very good car, was involved in a late crash. He ended up in the 26th position. Tyler Reddick, the rookie driver in the number 8, 28th. If you watched our Facebook Live, I put our non-NASCAR fan, but host of the Yankees pregame, Stephen Diener, on the spot. He picked Martin Truex Jr., did not go quite as well. Martin Truex Jr., 32nd. Kurt Busch in 33rd. Kyle Busch, another fantastic car. Your pick to win the race. Yep. Blew an engine and was trailing an unbelievable amount of smoke around the track for a while. I'm like, he's not really going to try and finish this race like that.
And then he was like, no, I'm going back out. And then they're like, no, you can't, dude.
I've seen steam engines put out less smoke than that. I mean, that was incredible how much smoke he was trailing. 34th position there. The big disappointment, of course, Jimmy Johnson, who really had a good 500 going, involved in the big one on lap 185, a 35th place finish. Brad Keselowski involved as well, 36th. Cole Custer with a 37th place finish, and a very disappointing day for a guy that I know had high hopes, especially after winning their dual race. William Byron, a last place finish, contact with the 47 car of Ricky Stenhouse Jr. That was lap number 60, bringing out the second caution, the first of Monday's portion of the race. He got turned around right there, very frustrated with Ricky Stenhouse Jr., felt that move was not a necessary move and was ill-timed and was a mistake on his part, sent him into the inside wall. Caution number 6 was that big one, which, again, we talk about the pushes. Joey Logano gave a huge push to Eric Almirola, and then Eric Almirola smashed into the back of Brad Keselowski. From the result of that push, that set off that wreck. 19 cars involved in that. And then right toward the end of the race, Ross Chastain involved in a major accident that was set off. An aggressive move. I believe Ryan Preece was the other car there that was coming down. Honestly, that was just aggression on both sides. I mean, he got pushed onto the apron, but also was a very aggressive move. But then again, this is the very end of the Daytona 500.
Yeah, you're going for anything.
I can't fault him because the hole was there and it closed.
Right.
I really can't. 9 cars involved in that accident. That one took out Joey Logano, who really was so close to making it through that accident and just absolutely nowhere to go in that situation. So a 40th place day for William Byron. I don't think you can understate the disappointment of that team today. Or sorry, I don't think you can overstate the disappointment of that team as they left that left the Speedway on Monday.
Yeah.
I mean, a huge run in the dual races, a big year, really, that we're all thinking for the 24 team. And they were running up front when the incident happened, and all these Hendrick cars really were running really well and all got caught up in their own individual incidents, unfortunately. That's Daytona. Nothing else you can say about it. That's just what happens. It doesn't matter how good your car is. You got to be lucky, too. And a lot of times,
of those tracks.
A lot of times you're not lucky.
Right.
Unfortunately, that was the case for William
Byron.
That's
like what we say every time. We'll pick somebody to win, but you really can't.
Look, it's tough to pick somebody in all realisticness for every single race out there. It's a lot harder to pick for Daytona and Talladega, though.
Right.
It's almost impossible, really. And then somebody who I didn't mention on the finishing order, Daniel Suarez. The reason why? He was not in the Daytona 500. That one was the big surprise from the dual races. Daniel Suarez failed to qualify with the new team, Gaunt Brothers Racing. You and I had this debate about Daniel Suarez, about not choosing to go to Richard Childress Racing, who said they wanted him to drive the defending champion car.
I'm telling you, I wonder if he is questioning this now.
Well,
you can't tell me that it's not at least running through your head. Like, wow, what if I would have...
You know, Daniel said before the duels that he feels that he would not drive for an organization he doesn't think at some point can win. And he knows that he's not going to be a winning car right now, that this isn't something they have to build on. And that, you know, he says that he thinks that, you know, a few months down the road, halfway through the season, they're going to be much better than they are right now. I don't know if they're going to be, even in his mind, a winning organization, but he thinks you're going to see the improvement. Either way, they could not make it on speed. And they were slow enough in the order on Sunday's qualifying that they had to race in. There wasn't any scenario that their speed could have gotten them into the Daytona 500. Right. So that's a bad sign to begin with. And then they crash in the duel, which it's Daytona. We mentioned it literally 5 seconds ago. You are not in control of your destiny a lot at Daytona. He wasn't. He got involved into an accident, and that ended his chance to run the 500. The good news is 38 cars for 40 spots at Las Vegas. Of course, he's full-time, so he will be running the race in Las Vegas. And if somehow this team finds their way to win a race or make it into the playoffs. I don't see that happening, but let's say it does, because they attempted to qualify for the Daytona 500, they are still eligible. If you fail to qualify but continue to attempt every race, you can still make the playoffs. It's only if you do not attempt the race that you are no longer eligible, unless, of course, you have some sort of a medical waiver or whatever it may be
right.
in that situation. So Daniel Suarez fails to qualify for the Daytona 500, even with everything. Was this a shock to you, Kristen?
No.
Really? Honestly, at first, I felt that... I thought Gaunt Brothers Racing was a chartered team. When I saw I wasn't locked in, I'm like, okay, this is interesting. But
well,
the 96...
We were talking about it last week, and I was... I don't want to say I've been against it the whole time, but in my head, I was just like, dude.
After qualifying, when we did the show last week,
right.
I wasn't sure. But right. before we qualified, I really expected Daniel Suarez to be one of the fastest, too. I thought, okay, the 96 team is here. They're going to be able to do that. They have been around. They're nothing new or anything, even though, you know, they were here last year with Gaunt Brothers. Mm-hmm. They were in the sport. I was surprised that they were not only the fastest two, but that they weren't in the fastest four and had no shot of making it in on speed. I mean, they were beat. I believe Reed Sorensen's team beat them. Nothing against them. But if right. you would have told me to bet on who was going to be faster on Daytona 500 qualifying day, it was definitely not going to be Reed Sorensen over Daniel Suarez. Disappointing day. Of course, we'll see what the team can do throughout the rest of the season. Worth noting, too, we had some major racing, of course, going on in other divisions. Congratulations to Noah Gragson. First career win at Daytona. And again, I got to make note of the finishing order. I really do, because you got to give credit where credit's due.
Yeah, it's another shocker.
Harrison Burton in the 20 car. Great job with the second place finish. We've seen him run before. He's a full-time driver this year. Great way to start the season. Timmy Hill in third place. And honestly, there was a moment there where I thought Timmy Hill might win
right.
the race there at Daytona, because he had a big run, and then we had the wreck and the caution. Unfortunately, just not meant to be. Timmy Hill, though, with a third place finish. Brandon Jones driving for Joe Gibbs Racing full-time once again this year. Got his first career win at Kansas last fall. He places in the fourth position. Chase Briscoe, fifth place. Justin Haley in sixth. Brandon Brown, Ray Black Jr., Ryan Sieg, though, and Alex LeBay round out the top 10. Fantastic job by all of these guys. Yep. Disappointing finishes on the other side of that. The pole winner for the race, Myatt Snyder, 33rd. Riley Herbst in 32nd. Justin Allgaier involved in an accident, ended up in 30th. Austin Cindric, 25th. Jeb Burton had such a good day going, involved in the big one, 23rd. Ross Chastain in 22nd. Now, Ross Chastain had an interesting weekend because he did not qualify for this race, but he finished in 22nd.
Funny how that works.
Yeah, it sounds weird. AJ Allmendinger did not qualify for this race as well. Teammates with Cowlick Racing, AJ had to go home. So what happened in the qualifying, those cars weren't locked in. You expect the speed out of them, but they had an issue on both those cars where the brakes were dragging slightly, and you know, you might as well put a parachute on the car.
Yeah, no, that's true.
The 38 car ended up switching. They took Jeff Green out. They put in Ross Chastain, which of course causes controversy because you got people out there who are saying, oh, well, it was bought. You bought a ride, and now Jeff Green is screwed. The team says that it was graciously offered, and it's a double-edged sword because I can't tell the difference. I don't know who to believe.
Yeah, we wouldn't know them saying that compared to anybody else. Yeah.
Because think about it this way. The 38 car could have sat there and said, wow, Ross Chastain could drive our car. Remember, somebody else owns that car. Cowlick's not getting the money or the points on that.
Mm-hmm.
So was it a situation where they said, man, Ross Chastain is running full-time. We could put him in this car. He won the Daytona Xfinity race in July last year. Could he potentially go out there and get us a fantastic finish? It didn't play out the way they were hoping, but could that have been part of the decision process?
Right.
Who knows?
Yeah, we're never going to know.
Absolutely. I don't think there's so much hate deserved on that, though. Everybody wants to hate about something. I don't see a reason to be so hateful on that situation. Truck Series, of course, took to the track, too. Big win for Grant Enfinger in another photo finish. Two of the three ending in a photo finish. The margin of victory... 0.01. That's a tenth of a second.
Wow.
And the driver he beat, Jordan Anderson, who, again, we talk about these guys that are feel-good stories. He basically said, look, this is a win for any underdog out there, that you can do this stuff. And behind him is a Cody I'm struggling with his name, but Cody Rohrbauer, however you officially say it, another underfunded team out there with a third-place finish. Derek Krause. If you don't know that name, get used to it. Bill McAnally Racing, I believe he's with, who has come up from the K&N series in ARCA. Derek Krause was Haley Deegan's teammate in ARCA, and he was the one that actually won, I'm sorry, in K&N West, and actually won the championship last year. So this is the defending champ, moves on up to compete full-time. Fourth place at Daytona, and fifth place to round out your top five, Natalie Decker.
You go, girl.
What a finish for Natalie. You know, there's a lot of pressure, I think, on Natalie Decker, yeah, not only because Haley Deegan has done so well, but last season did not go well for Natalie Decker. I think that is safe to say.
Right.
So this has got to be such a confidence boost. I know it's a plate track. What can she do as we get to more of these intermediates, the short tracks, road courses, everything else that we hit? That's still going to be a big task. Mm-hmm. But Natalie Decker, Nice Motorsports, fifth place finish. Credit where credit is due. Congratulations there. Austin Hill, Johnny Sauter, Ross Chastain, Sheldon Creed, and Jason White rounded out your top 10 in the NASCAR Gander Outdoor and RV Truck Series season opener. As usual, we had crashes.
Yep.
It was the new full-time driver for Nice Motorsports at the end of stage number one with five laps left to go. Ty Majeski flipped right out of the tri-oval. And again, landed upside down. It had to be flipped over. NASCAR does a fantastic job flipping these cars over. Got to give them a lot of credit for that. And how they've worked so much on the safety of not only these cars, but how they do things to assist the drivers and their procedures. Early flip for Ty Majeski. And then, of course, as usual, we did have the big one. But five caution flags, a little bit less than last year. But for some reason, this debate comes up. Are the trucks just a wreck fest that wastes money at Daytona? And should the trucks no longer be racing at Daytona?
Is Daytona and Talladega a wreck fest and we shouldn't be racing? Come on.
Just for the trucks, because they don't
have
much money.
I know, but still, it's like it goes the same way. Like, every race is a wreck, no matter which, if it's truck, Xfinity, or come on.
Let's look at what the race was, okay? We had good racing. We had a fantastic photo finish. We nearly had an upset winner. And everybody was talking about how incredible the finish was. And then you're going to sit here and come to me and say
get rid of it? Right.
Why? Look, I know people, there are people out there, they hate Daytona, they hate Talladega because of the wrecks. You know, I don't watch that going, all right, when's the big one going to happen?
Right.
You know, when wrecks happen, you jump off your seat. You know, you're like, oh my God, what just happened? And a lot of times, honestly, they end with, ugh, great. I didn't want to see that. And you know, there's a misconception that every NASCAR fan sits there just like, when are they going to wreck? And, you know, look, you got people like that. I'm not going to say you don't. But as a real race fan, I'm sorry, you don't sit there hoping for the wreck. Those wrecks happen, though, because the cars are so close and they're racing so hard. And call it manufactured racing if you want. Say take the plates off and let them go fast. Let them just run whatever they would want. Well, the plates are, they're off.
That's gonna
the tapered space or whatever it may be. But did you not just see what happened
right, with
the reduced speeds to
That's
Ryan Newman?
It's going
to
be even worse.
The car is going to clear the catch fence at that rate. And then we're going to have something much worse. So that is just stupid. I'm sorry. Right. It is dumb. If you think that's the idea, you're completely wrong on that. Because we just saw at 205 miles an hour, basically, with them being slowed down, what happened to Ryan Newman's car in that race. These happen because they're close and they're racing hard. That's what sets off these wrecks. And I'm sorry, that means that it's exciting racing. Because we always complain when they get strung out. But then when they're together and then a wreck happens because everybody's racing so hard, you're mad that they're wrecking.
Right.
There's
no
Can we please anybody, please just somebody just take one for the team, even if you're mad, and just be like, you know what, I
just
like this.
Shut up.
That's another good example. Kristen's got the right idea. Can you just shut up already? Seriously.
I wish you could just write. I mean, I guess you could. Just be like, shut up.
Oh, I could. I'll tell you. Like, I came so close to responding to some people on Twitter and going off, and I had to like contain myself because I know this is not going to benefit me.
I don't want to bring it up, but I sort of want to bring it up. I would have went off on that one post.
Which one?
The Ryan Newman one.
You mean the Ryan Blaney?
No. With the wreck and the insurance company.
Oh, okay. I got to tell you about this if you didn't see it. It was on my Instagram story. I don't think it's there right now, but this is just messed up.
I would have joined in, everybody else blowing up.
This was only up for like 4 minutes, but...
You'll understand why.
So got the hate that it deserved. So this is a post.
And do you still have it?
I do have it right here. I was just pulling up here in my photos. I couldn't find it for a second there. But I'm not going to say the attorney's name because I just don't.
Right.
It's an attorney. I don't need to be sued.
Right.
But a law firm, which their phone number is a 561, so I'd imagine that they're down here, posted up this crash. So now on the tweet, they linked a story from today.com, and the headline says, before even the ... on it, NASCAR driver Ryan Newman in serious condition after Daytona 500, and then it gets cut off and you have to click on the link. It says that this is serious, his condition, in the headline that they share. They write, crashes are common at the Daytona 500, where drivers racing for position at 200 miles an hour and in tight quarters often make contact. If you or a loved one were injured in a car accident, call us, phone number, website. To think that someone...
I would have flipped out on.
You are just an a-hole.
Yeah.
To think that that's a good thing to put. Everybody's still freaking out. At that point... We didn't know.
At that point, though, it was all right. That too. But at that point, even though they deleted it, like you said, everybody's got it.
Screenshot.
Yeah.
4 minutes up. It already had like 7 comments in like 4 minutes. I caught it right away. And where did I got it on my phone? I put it up and I blasted them on my Instagram because it was so insensitive. Keep in mind, this was yesterday morning, I believe, at like 8 a.m. I mean, if I go back to the picture and see here, I took this screenshot 9:10 a.m. yesterday. We didn't know anything other than Ryan Newman's injuries were non-life-threatening. We didn't have a picture of him walking around where we can take a sigh of relief and say, Ryan Newman is okay right now.
Right. And then you so get
wrong.
That. Yeah.
And they really do deserve the call out and the hate that they're getting right now online because it's just messed up. This weekend, back on track, coming up pretty soon. The teams are had a really rough week here. Thursday's Hauler Parade down the strip in Las Vegas gets canceled because of just the turnaround time. You think about what these guys have to do. We wrapped up Daytona Monday at about 8 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
They have to drive back to Charlotte, North Carolina, switch out the cars with the Vegas
then
cars,
go to their next
and then
destination.
Drive to Las Vegas where we have practice on Friday.
Yeah.
Kudos to these Hauler drivers because that is really just a rough task that has to happen right there.
I wonder how far that trip is.
I believe they said it was a 36-hour drive.
Oof.
From Charlotte, North Carolina, where right. most of these teams are based out of across the country.
So add another however much it is from here.
And you know, look, this is one of the toughest parts of the season. This is the West Coast swing. We're out there for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So this is always tough on the teams. And you know, another shout out. The NASCAR and Fox crew has been in Daytona since the Super Bowl. And before that, Mike Joy was saying they've been down here for 25 days and haven't been home. And because of the rain delay, they're going straight to Las Vegas because they have to set up. So those guys have been on the road for, they're going to be on the road for a month, basically, without going home.
Yeah.
Dedication to that job, too. Got to give them a lot of credit. Because it is definitely a rough situation to be in for all of them. Well, I can't state it enough. I am so happy to have been able to share with everybody that Ryan Newman
is
up.
Can we share that?
Yeah, right when we wrap this, let's get that up on our Flag to Flag Facebook page.
Yeah, if you want to see it.
You can follow us along there at Flag to Flag on Facebook. Honestly, I retweet on my personal Twitter, at SuitsKVJ. If you haven't seen it yet, though, we'll get that up on our Facebook page, that photo, and send our well wishes, of course, to Ryan Newman. We don't know the extent of any injuries he currently has, what the recovery process is, but Ryan Newman
but
is up and about.
That man is standing. That's victory
he's a tough
in
guy.
Itself.
I'll tell you that much. Ryan Newman, this guy is one hell of a tough guy to be walking around 2 days after what we saw on the track at Daytona International Speedway in the Daytona 500. So happy. I just can't say it enough. Such a great, great feeling to see Ryan Newman up and about. And most importantly, with his two daughters, because family is what is so important.
Can't even imagine. Don't even want to think of that.
I can't imagine what they were going through as a family. So happy to see that. We're going to race, though, again. It's the one thing. We keep on rolling with the most in-depth and longest season in professional sports, and we get to kick it off with the Daytona 500. Not the ending we were hoping for, but still a fantastic race up to that point. And now mm-hmm. we can all breathe a sigh of relief that Ryan Newman's okay. We can look back at the race and what went down. We're doing a fantasy league, and I got to be honest with you, I don't know where we all finished. I'm pretty sure one of our listeners beat us all.
Well, that's embarrassing.
Yes, I don't think you and I were at the top of the chart. We were doing decent for a little bit, but it was, I had William Byron, and that wrecked early. I thought, okay, I'm not going to use him a lot, maybe, depending on how he runs, so I switched him out, and I had my backup. My garage driver was Joey Logano. I'm like, all right, I got my ace in the hole.
Right.
So much for that.
Yeah, it was Kyle Busch.
Yep, so much for that.
I was Keselowski.
I had Chase Elliott winning stage two and not stage one. I believe he won the first stage, and I had Kyle Busch winning stage one, and then the Toyotas literally ran half throttle.
We just 40th. Don't know what we're doing.
It's Daytona. It's my first time playing, too. You can join us and jump on. I mean, with how bad we did, you could probably catch us, even though you're a race behind.
You'll probably pass us.
Catch all of the action on the Fantasy Live. It's a free game, NASCAR.com. Just go ahead and create your little free account, email, and a password. We're in a public league. You can join. Flag to Flag is the name of it. You'll see me in there as suits. You know, you got Kristen in there as well, a couple other people. You get to pick 5 drivers per race, 10 drivers per the regular season max. You can use them 10 times, rather. 1 garage pick, too. You got them there. If they're doing crappy, you can switch them in before the start of stage 3 if you want to make a switch there. And you can get bonus points. You're picking the pole winner, the stage winners, the race winner, or the winning manufacturer as well. So join us. Let's have some fun. You can play against us. NASCAR.com to join all of that. I want to touch really quick before we get out of here. I'll bring that back down. I was about to do my wrap, and I just realized I never mentioned this. The ratings on the Daytona 500 and this overall week, you know, I'm so hopeful for a big year, and it's really unfortunate that we had a rain delay because we had so much momentum coming in. The Busch Clash, 4-year high in ratings, up 7%. Unfortunately, the duel at Daytona was down by just 0.1 on the rating scale, and that was rain delayed. That was great to see. NASCAR Xfinity Series, a slight bump, 1.09 rating, 1.8 million viewers. That's up 0.05 from last year. The trucks, another rain delay, down from a 0.66 to a 0.59, and just dropped 16,000 viewers. All things considered, an hour delay, that was good to see. Mm-hmm. 1 million. This is the part that really does disappoint, is just we had such a great momentum coming for the Daytona 500. NASCAR Race Day last year had 4.1 million viewers and a 2.52 rating. This year, 6.8 million and a 4.4 rating.
We
almost twice
had
as much.
That.
The Daytona 500 tune-in rating was up 32%, 11.93 million. That is an 8.47, the highest since 2015. And the first 20 laps averaged a 10.935 million viewership, up 19%.
Wow.
Over the entire full race average last year. All things considered, with the Monday race, viewership, a 7.33 million viewers, 4.2 rating. Last year was a low in the 9 million range.
That's still not as bad as I would have.
No, you
thought.
Know, and I wish it was a little later in the evening. I kind of was, too. So hopefully we can carry this into Las Vegas and keep the momentum going and really just have a good year. You know, last year, I think we hit the bottom. I'm excited, and I really hope
started
that
from
we
the
can.
Bottom, now are you?
We dropped to the bottom. Now we're here.
Is that what it is?
Let's get back on
clearly,
the bottom.
Clearly, I don't listen to that type of stuff.
Yeah, your knowledge. I'm actually surprised I know that much, but it's only because I've had multiple people in my life play that, and I'm like, okay, what the hell are we listening to right here? Can we put on the Eagles? All right, let's wrap this thing up now. Where you can catch the action this weekend, it starts on Friday night, the Strat 200 NASCAR Gander Outdoor and RV Truck Series. Late start on that one, 9 p.m. on Fox Sports 1. Saturday afternoon is the Boyd Gaming 300 NASCAR Xfinity Series, 4 p.m. on FS1. And the big race, Pennzoil 400. We get into the regular season. Now we're going to see who has what. Mile and a half track. We're off the super speedway. How are these guys going to perform? It's the Pennzoil 400 Sunday, 3:30 p.m. on Fox. Enjoy all the action. I believe we are on the air next week. Got to check the schedule, see what games are on. But back with you on Monday, unless somehow we get rain in Las Vegas. Which, by the way, I do think there is a chance of rain on Saturday. Which,
uh-oh.
Casually, of course. NASCAR goes to the desert. Of course it's going to rain. Why wouldn't it?
Oh, no.
Hopefully we have some good weather here. The good news is at least the 10-day forecast, which probably means nothing, looks good for Fontana the week after that. So thank you so much for hanging with us. Can't say enough how happy we are to hear about Ryan Newman. Our well wishes continue to go out to him and the entire Newman family and Roush Fenway Racing. No words yet on who's going to be in the 6th car coming this weekend. And honestly, with everything with Ryan Newman, that's not the focus I have right now. When that's announced, it'll be announced. And we'll pass it along to you on the Flag to Flag Facebook page. Thank you so much for joining us for the podcast. We'll catch you next week on Monday.